Welcome to Radio Sefarad's English Corner. I'm your host, Linda Jimenez, bringing news and other features of Jewish interest to Radio Sefarad's English-speaking audience in Spain and around the world. Our trivia question for this week is, what is brutalism and where can you find examples of it? Victor Enrique was born in 1976 in Barcelona, where he began to study architecture before he realized that the practical restrictions of the field limited his creativity. He turned to photography and computer-assisted design, which he had been using for years, and began to create what he calls a dreamlike version of reality. Enrique has traveled widely and lived in several different cities, including Riga, Munich, and especially Tel Aviv. Enrique's artwork focuses on city structures, taking a particular building that catches his attention, then deconstructing and reconstructing it. He uses computer-aided photographic manipulation to transform the building, bending, twisting, and reshaping it. The resulting image often contains a metaphorical twist as well. The reimagined building becomes a form of commentary on the society that built it. These are not simply digitally created images, but an inventive use of digital graphics to alter real-life urban scenes. We spoke with Victor about his life and work.
Thank you very much for speaking with us, Victor. Could you first tell us a little bit about yourself? Where you're from, your background?
Well, thank you very much for having me here with you. And I was born in Barcelona in 1976. That's 40 years ago. And my parents said that already when I was a child, I began to have a passion for volumes. Instead of playing with the kids on the street, I was mostly captive in my own room playing with all these games such as Lego and stuff like that, creating some sort of cities and urban scapes. The thing is that with time, I somehow developed some skills with computer graphics and when I entered college, I studied architecture back in 1994. I already was quite proficient in computer graphics. So that gave me a good chance to show my projects, my designs, already with some tools that none of the other students had in those years. And my teachers, when they saw my presentations, they just called me and said, listen, do you want to work for us in our studios? I say, yeah, why not? And that's how I began. Mostly while I was studying architecture, I began working for my teachers, making what is called and it's understood as 3D renderings. I ended up finishing my studies in 2002 at the same time that I was growing a company in Barcelona.
What kind of a company?
Yeah, basically computer graphics for architects, doing 3D renderings. My clients were just like sending me their designs, and then I had to build their designs in 3D, and then after make some kind of attractive images to let them show their projects to their own customers in a way that they could have more chances to make their designs come true. So that's actually something that in those years was not very very much spread. We were just few people that we were doing that. Nowadays it's mostly the opposite. You can find companies of this sort all over the world, and there's a lot of competitivity.
So this was all on the computer?
Yeah, everything done on the computer, and that's why I felt always comfortable, because you know I was working with computers since I was 10 or 11 years old. I was using my father's computer at home, so the thing grew big. And in 2005, we were just like 20, 25 people in my company, but somehow the thing went out of control. And I got exhausted of the same old thing, repeating the projects, and I was feeling a little bit bored of all. So I just went out of my own company and I somehow began a journey without any direction that has led me to the actual situation, which is basically doing fine art photography. So that's a little bit the story behind me.
Why didn't you actually become an architect?
Well, in the School of Architecture, while we were studying and working hard to make our presentations, I was already noticing how some of my classmates, they were spending many more hours than I was in their own presentations. They were worrying more about the concept of the project rather than the presentation itself. And my worries were more towards the presentation. So that in those moments, that I realized that I was never going to be an architect, because an architect is thinking all the time in things that I'm not good at, actually. An architect mostly has to think in advance about all the things that can happen to a user of a building. So they need to be good in planning. They need to be good in organizing huge amounts of people working in the construction of one building, for instance. So they have to deal with a lot of legal things, and there's a lot of job to do that is not, let's say, attractive unless you like it. And that's what makes an architect, you know. And I would say that even though in the world there are thousands or even millions of architects, actually true architects, they're just a few, because these are the ones who love any single part of their work. And most of the rest of the architects, they just do like CAD design or very small functions. But so it's a job that demands a lot, and you have really to be fully dedicated to it. And that was not my choice. I studied architecture because it was the closest thing that I found in the university that could fit with my dreams of designing imaginary cities. But when you are in the university, you realize that architecture is something else. So actually, that's why I didn't become an architect, I would say.
Well, I think that something that's very interesting is that you photograph buildings, but you almost deconstruct the buildings, whereas an architect would construct the buildings. What made you interested in this kind of way of treating buildings?
Well, yeah, it's that's really hard for me to answer, because most of the images that I've done in the past, they respond to very intimate, or I would say even subconscious reasons. And it's even today, it's hard for me to write down in words the why I did something in particular or what I didn't. I think that there's something not quite resolved in me towards architecture. That may be one reason. So when I decide to create these images, I think it's because maybe I just want to say to people around me, hey, it's me, I am here. Just, I can do beautiful things. So, yeah, come along and see what I'm doing. So actually, most of the images I did, those that are in the beginning of the whole process, I think that they just want to call people. So the next image that I was producing had to be more special and complex than the previous one.
Do you see a building and suddenly have kind of an inspiration and say, this is what I want to do with this building? Or do you go after buildings? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what to say. Well, there has been a process. In the beginning, in the first years, I was mostly spending my free time walking in the cities, just to discover them. Actually, this is something I really like to do. And in those walks, obviously, I was finding nice examples of architecture. So I was shooting them. I was capturing their geometries and taking them back home and then taking a look in my computer to see if they were nice, good, beautiful enough or not. But there are some buildings that they were more special for me, and mostly they were located next to my home or next to my working place, and there were buildings that I was passing by day after day. And that's actually one of the reasons why I choose one and not, I didn't choose another one. So there has to be a moment in which I develop some special relationship with a particular building. And well, and apart from that, besides that, I think that I have some kind of feeling towards those buildings that are not, we could say, beautiful. Buildings that maybe have been forgotten by people, or buildings that you would never notice. And if you see, most of my works are depicting buildings that are not beautiful at all, but actually they're there standing. So somehow they need to be pulled back into reality so that everybody can realize that that these buildings are there, actually.
Is there any particular architectural style or period that you especially like to manipulate?
Yeah, well, as I was saying, mostly these buildings, somehow I found out that they belong to an architectural style that is called brutalism, which is a style that mostly is made of concrete structures. And we have a lot of examples of brutalism, let's say, in the Eastern Europe countries or in London, industrial cities. And of course, for instance, Tel Aviv has its own version of brutalism. And yeah, I like them particularly. But then in the last works that I made, I was more focused in choosing a building that was not, let's say, hidden by trees or hard to photograph. I was looking also for the perfect spots in the cities, and I didn't care much on the kind of building I was shooting. So yeah, mostly that. At the beginning of time, I really liked, let's say, Frank Gehry was my favorite architect when I was a kid. And later on, when I began studying architecture, I learned about real masters, real good architects. So actually, I am really in love with many, many architects and all over the world.
Are there any architects who you, let's say, don't like and for that reason want to manipulate their work or take them apart? Or are there any architects that you think, this is, there's nothing I can do with this, it's perfect, I just want to leave it alone out of respect for the person?
Well, yeah, well, there's many architects that, of course, I don't like. But I believe that in architecture, as in other works, people mostly want to leave their signature, leave their style, leave the way how they see life and the way how they see this world. So I don't think it's fair if I begin to make critics to some architect, because I know that these works are personal. So even though some architects are famous and many people know about them, but their works are still personal. So who am I to criticize what they do? Mostly, I don't work this way, that saying, okay, I hate this guy, so I'm going to transform his building. most of the times, I don't even know who was the architect who made that building. Actually, I didn't care.
Mm-hmm. When you say brutalism, is it actually a style, or is it more of a mentality of, you know, buildings that just don't seem to have too much of a personality, but that they could be from any real period in time?
Well, brutalism is a very strong style in architecture, and it belongs to mostly the second half of the 20th century. And it's a kind of an evolution of the international movement, which was somehow written down by some masters such as Le Corbusier or Mies van der Rohe. And brutalism what wants to say actually is that buildings are not something like delicate. Buildings must show like how powerful they are. And not only in their size, but also in their materials. And that's why in most of them, what you find is concrete. In previous styles in architecture, concrete was something to be hidden. Concrete was something to be used only for structures. And facades were made by brick or by stone or other materials that could be considered more elegant. But in Brutalism, everything is upside down or inside out. You see a lot of concrete, and the nice thing of concrete is that it's like playing with sculpture. You can define the shape of concrete the way you want. You're not constrained to orthogonal shapes like horizontal and vertical. You can do whatever you want. You can just build a kind of a box, a geometric box made by wood, and then you throw concrete inside and the concrete will take the shape of that box. And that's what Brutalism is. Of course, there's a lot of meaning behind, and there's a lot of ideology and even political statements behind. And the good thing of Brutalism is that nowadays, buildings designed and built in the 50s or the 60s, they look exactly the same. So it's amazing how beautiful they are, I would say.
You've traveled widely and you've lived in many different cities, including Rome, Riga, Munich, and Tel Aviv. What can you tell us about the different cities that you've either visited or lived in with relation to your work? And is there any city you would like to photograph that you haven't yet?
Yeah, well, answering the second question, of course, I love to photograph any single city all over the world, from New York to Ulaanbaatar in Mongolia or a lost city in the middle of Zimbabwe. I don't care. I mean, all the cities for me are interesting. I'm aware that I will not have enough time in my lifetime to photograph all the cities I want. So I just try not to get mad at it. And the next chance I have to go somewhere, for me, it's the best chance to shoot that place. For instance, in this August, I will be holding a lecture in Vienna, a city where I've been already twice. But it's going to be the first time that I will be there also to shoot the city. So I hope it's going to be nice. But regarding the first question, well, yeah, actually, when I left my company in 2005, I headed to Riga. Riga was the first city that I went in this long journey, this seven-year-old journey.
Why Riga?
Why Riga? Well, just, I mean, it's quite simple. I met a girl on the street, and she was from Latvia, and I fell in love with her and said, "Where are you from?" She said, "I'm from Riga." "Okay, let's go to Riga." I just wanted to leave Barcelona. I didn't want to stay here one day longer. And for me, Riga was the perfect chance, because it's inside Europe, but it has a portion of the former Soviet Union aura. So everything for me there was new, totally new for me. The country has nothing to do with Spain. In Spain, we have mountains. Latvia is totally flat. It's a cold place. Riga is the 50% of the city is industry, and the 50% remaining is Eastern Europe architecture. So I said, wow. I mean, I was amazed on everything in there. And actually, when I first arrived, the city was in the middle of a process of renovation. They had already left the Soviet Union in the 90s, and they were building up the country. And most of the industrial places that were used in the Soviet Union were empty. Well, empty of industry, but they were full of artists. So I say, wow, it's a perfect place. I was looking for factories with artists inside, and Riga has both of them. So I stayed there for 2-3 years, basically, because I connected with all this artist world. And thanks to that, I began doing my pictures, making my photography. However, living conditions in a Baltic country such as Latvia, for a guy like me who comes from the south, from the Mediterranean, are quite harsh. And in the third year, I couldn't resist any longer, and I moved to something similar to Barcelona, we could say, and that place is Tel Aviv, which obviously was a shock to me because it had nothing to do with Latvia and even almost nothing to do with Barcelona.
How did you pick Tel Aviv?
Well, it's a nice story. When I was in Riga, I was learning Latvian, and my teacher, a guy from Latvia, he was Jewish. He is Jewish, actually. And his parents lived in Petah Tikva, out like some kilometers away from Tel Aviv. And one day, my teacher said, "Listen, I'm going to Israel to visit my parents." And I said, "Okay, maybe I go with you for a couple of weeks because I've never been there and I've heard it must be a very interesting place." And so it was. When I first arrived in Tel Aviv and I saw all that sun and all that street life and all that good food and everything, I said, "Wow, I have to stay here." So my 3 weeks became 3 years. And that's how it worked, actually. And then my friend, my teacher, went back to Latvia and I stayed there. And the thing is, in Tel Aviv, the atmosphere is different from Riga, of course. And for instance, there is even a stronger artistic movement in the street. There's a lot of art galleries. There's a lot of people working in their artistic projects. I believe this is because Tel Aviv has strong connections with real important artistic lobbies such as New York or Los Angeles. So if you do good in Tel Aviv, you have good chances to maybe exhibit your work in these big cities and become a famous artist. And the thing is that there's a lot of artists in Tel Aviv that they resign and they just give up after some try because it's much harder than it seems. But that atmosphere as well, it was very attractive to me. And actually, this is because most of my production actually is based on the city of Tel Aviv. So basically, this is the reason why my production began to rise up, because the atmosphere in Tel Aviv was so strong, so I felt compelled to work a lot and to show people what I was doing. And so, yeah, most of the images that I've made to this date are actually shot in Tel Aviv.
And now you're back in Barcelona.
Yeah, well, unfortunately for me, I was a little bit not very, I mean, I'm not Jewish, let's speak it clearly. And my living conditions in Israel were barely legal. I was entering and exiting the country every 3 months. And I thought that that was enough. Actually, nobody at the customs said that was doing something wrong. But the thing is that everything would have been okay for me unless one fact, which is that my pictures began to get published in important media, such as Haaretz. And important media is read by everyone, including people from the Ministry of Interior, who probably they realized that how is it possible that a Spanish artist is living in Tel Aviv for already 3 years and we don't have any records of it. So yeah, they came to me and they make some questions and I said the truth. I said, yeah, I've been going out and going in every 3 months, and they said that that was not the proper way to proceed. And I said, I didn't know. If I knew that, I wouldn't have done it. So they just like throwing me away, and that's going to be 5 years in this next month of June since I was kicked out of from Israel. Otherwise, I would have stayed there because I was really, really in love with the place and with the country, with the people I've met, with everything. But that was not the case. And yeah, after jumping 1 year in Munich, in Germany, in a way, it's trying to, you know, put things together in my mind. And finally, I said, "Listen, Victor, your place is Barcelona. I know you went away from it 7 years ago, but this is a place where you belong." And since then, since 2012, I've been living here happily and doing my best, close to my family and next to my culture. I mean, life is easier when you're at home.
So you don't have any plans to go move somewhere else right now?
Yes, but not in the same way I did in the past. In the past, everything was set up as a long-term journey without knowing when to come back. It's different now. My projects are more conceptually built. So, for instance, I made a project in Bogota, in Colombia, last year, which I wrote down before doing it. And it took me 2 months in Bogota. So I hope that I will be visiting places in the future, but probably not in the same way I did in the past. I think it's a better way this way, because you clarify at the very beginning what is it what you're going to do somewhere, and so once it's done, you come back. You don't need to stay there any longer for no reason, unless you want to become a traveler. That's always an option.
Is there anything else you would like to add?
Well, basically, as I said before, in 20 days is going to be the 5th anniversary of my deportation from Israel. And if some friends of mine are going to listen to this broadcast, just I would like to tell them that I miss them so much, and that hopefully in 5 years' time, I will be back in Israel again. So that's all. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, that's it for this week. As always, we'd love to hear from you. So please email us any comments or suggestions or questions you'd like us to answer on the air. Our address is EnglishCorner@RadioSefarad.com. See you next week.